the 8th time is apparently the charm when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs playing the Denver Broncos. Not only did the Chiefs take on the Broncos and win last week, they took on Superman Peyton Manning and got Clark Kent instead. And Clark Kent's arm is not what it used to be, apparently. Welcome to the Roughing the Kicker podcast on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and pinch me, the season's not over. I'm sure I proclaimed this season dead and gone with a 1-4 team, as we all should have, but the Chiefs are still alive and kicking after a dominant victory in Denver over Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler. But look at the most underappreciated stat from that game, talk about that game in full, break down how things happened, why they happened. Then I want to also explain why the Chiefs' offense is nothing to worry about from this game. So there's a lot of thought that the defense played well, the offense wasn't good enough. I'll tell you that it was. Plus, previewing the Chargers game, the Kansas City Chiefs are in the playoff hunt. What's going on? Kansas City Chiefs 29, Denver Broncos 13, and this game was never that close. The Broncos scored the last 13 points. The Kansas City Chiefs were in Denver and winning 29-0. I'm sorry, I did not see that coming. I will admit to you that being up 29 on the Broncos took me by surprise, and the biggest story from the game is obviously the final straw of Peyton Manning's career. Starting with what happened, what the buzz was in pregame, Peyton Manning was then listed with two injuries on the injury report for a foot and a rib cage injury. Still listed as probable, obviously still played. Emmanuel Sanders was I don't think he was officially doubtful, but it sounded like it was going to be difficult for him to play. He did. And Nile Davis ended up being inactive for the Chiefs. Very small story, in my opinion. I've talked about Nile Davis and Charkendrick West since the preseason. I'm surprised that he's not on the active roster or was on the active roster for this game. But he's the second guy at best, and you know maybe the Chiefs want to get more work to Spencer Ware. Doesn't matter. Not the story of this game right now. Let's get to the fun stuff. Right out of the gate. Peyton Manning on his first pass just hits Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters, the other thing I've been saying all year, the two things I feel like I've gotten right so far are Charkendrick West and Marcus Peters. Don't listen to anything else I've said. But this was a nice play from Peters, but it wasn't like one of the crazy reads. It was a duck. Peyton Manning threw a duck here. The Broncos ran the first two plays, didn't get anything, so Manning needed to make a throw, and he just didn't. He just tossed it up there, and it was ugly. Later on, we found out because he has a torn plantar fascia tendon in his foot, people were talking about how it looked like Peyton Manning wasn't stepping into his throws enough. Well, yeah, he wasn't because his foot was torn in half by the end of the game. So that makes a ton of sense, but it looked like that was the exact problem from the first passes of the game. So Peters takes that one, and then immediately, in my opinion, being in Denver, even picking off Peyton Manning on the first pass before he has a chance to break the all-time passing record, which he was just a few yards from getting, and obviously eventually got, I think, on the second drive. The most important thing after that pick was the Chiefs needed to go and score a touchdown. Yeah, Peyton Manning threw one bad pass. He was 0 for 1 on passes at that point. And it was an ugly, ugly duckling that he threw up there. But the pressure at that point was still on the Chiefs because they had to go score. You cannot settle for field goals. I mean, they could have actually, in retrospect. But you cannot settle for field goals winning on the road in the NFL, especially when you're playing up against Peyton Manning. And we didn't know how bad Peyton would continue to look. But the Chiefs did it. Smith went to Kelsey, West ran again, and then first and goal at the 4, the Chiefs didn't have to go very far, they started with the ball at the 31-yard line. Charkendrick West, 4-yard run for the touchdown, starting off the game 7-0 is beautiful. But then right after that, the Broncos go 3 and out, starting with a sack from Jay Howard, which Manning fumbled, was recovered by Ronnie Hillman though. And then Manning threw his pass to Ronnie Hillman for 4 yards, which broke the all-time passing record. They stopped the game. Peyton did not look happy about it, and he shouldn't have because he had done nothing but crummy things. He threw a pick and then fumbled on the last two plays. And then Manning missed Emmanuel Sanders, and they had to punt it back to the Chiefs. So once again, the Chiefs have the ball at this point, up 7-0. And I'll give you a spoiler alert. I think the pressure is on the Chiefs at least until, like, halftime. We saw what happened the last time the Chiefs put the Broncos. If you don't remember, it was Thursday night. The Chiefs were winning at home, and then they gagged it up like choking dogs. I, as a Chiefs fan, have a disaster complex, if that's a thing. A little bit of Murphy's Law for any time the Chiefs play Peyton Manning. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. If Peyton Manning can throw a touchdown pass to win the game with 2 minutes left against the Chiefs, Peyton Manning will throw a touchdown pass with 2 minutes left to beat the Chiefs. So I was never comfortable with this game, certainly in the first half. But then the Chiefs take six plays, 43 yards, to go pick up a field goal, 10-0, still not feeling like there's any confidence there. But then it goes back to the Broncos, and they go 3-and-out again. But then the Chiefs follow that up with going on a 3-and-out of their own. And then the Broncos have the ball once again, 10-0, and Peyton Manning delivers again. But by delivers, I mean to the Chiefs. He tries to go to Emmanuel Sanders short to the left, but Sean Smith picks it off this time, takes it back to the 50-yard line, so the Chiefs only have to go 50 yards for a score here. And even off of a wonderful play by Smith, and you're feeling great about how Peyton Manning looks, because in 1, 2, 3, 4, four drives, they have 2 3-and-outs and 2 interceptions. I'll take that. I will take that from Peyton Manning if I can get it. And on the pass before Sean Smith's interception, Marcus Peters jumped the route and almost had it. I mean, it hit him. He had his hands on it. And right before that play, just based on the flow of the game, I tweeted that Peters looked like he was going to get another pick before the game was over, or certainly someone was, because of how bad, how bad Peyton Manning had looked. And then that very next play hits Peters in the hands. The very next play, Smith actually takes it. Chiefs can't go the 50, but they get into field goal range. Santos hits the second field goal of the day. Then the next Broncos possession, Derek Johnson had a clean lane to Peyton Manning on a little play-action play, and Manning just laid down to take a nap because he was not feeling like getting crushed by Derek Johnson. And, you know, God bless Peyton Manning. I wouldn't want to get hit by Derek Johnson either. So the Broncos punt again. The Chiefs end up punting back, and somewhere in that drive, at that point in the game, it looked like to me the Broncos and the Chiefs were both taking a similar stance on defense, which was saying, we are going to go out of our way to stop the run. We're going to make sure Tarkendrick West and C.J. Anderson and Ronnie Hillman, respectively, don't beat us. And we're going to make the quarterback and his receivers make the plays. Usually that's not a good strategy going against Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning usually makes the plays because he's Peyton Manning. And he was not in this game. But what that meant for the Chiefs on offense is that it turned to Alex Smith, Travis Kelce, Jeremy Maclin, I thought Chris Conley. Conley never showed up. Not even like he made bad plays. He just was not involved in the game plan from what I could tell. Albert Wilson even. And the Chiefs obviously did what they needed to do offensively. I'll come back to that at the end of the game, because there was never any great flashiness from the offense. And that makes some people worried about how the offense played in this game. Stick around. I'll explain to you why that's not something to freak out about. But at this point in the game, 13-0, the zero was huge, but it also felt like Peyton Manning could go to halftime, come out with an adjustment, and score 3 straight touchdowns on his next 3 possessions. Even though he looked terrible, that's just the fear I have. The perpetual terrifying fear of getting late game Manninged. And then Peyton Manning threw it straight to Josh Malga. I mean, it hit Josh Malga in the hands, and I don't think his feet had to move. It was really superbly strange. And also, as far as who Manning was targeting, we remember in week 2, and you go back to last year, Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper just got picked on. And in this game, the last couple of weeks, this is the strangest thing that I don't know, and I'm happy I don't know it. I can't figure out what Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator, and the Chiefs defense are doing about the slot for the most part. Philip Gaines is on IR. Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper and Steven Nelson all have their issues. Last week before this game, I went over the snap counts for the secondary. And Tyvon Branch, he ended up getting hurt in this game. It looks like he should be able to be back for the Chargers game as I record this early on Friday morning. I don't know how they're covering the slot, but the entire secondary had a fantastic game here. But as far as the edges go, with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, really probably the best 1-2 combo of receivers in the league. If I'm glossing over somebody, fine. I can make the argument for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders against any other 1-2 punch as far as receivers go in the entire NFL. And Marcus Peters and Sean Smith won that battle, partially because Manning wasn't delivering them, but Manning didn't have a whole lot of really open windows. He had a few times where he overthrew or underthrew, well, a lot of times where he overthrew or underthrew a guy, but not necessarily really wide open guys. And it seemed to me like Manning was, maybe smartly, trying to avoid Sean Smith, trying to avoid the more experienced, NFL speed physical receiver, just because I say NFL speed as in a guy who is used to the NFL speed. So he wanted to avoid Sean Smith, which means he had to go at Marcus Peters, and Marcus Peters was winning his matchups. So not only was Manning just kind of bad in general, he was losing the matchups in the secondary, obviously, to the point where he threw it straight to Josh Malga. And at that point, Peyton Manning reached a 0 quarterback rating. I wrote at the time, "I'm still very wary of Manning, but this is the least afraid I've ever been of him. And Smith is hitting his spots. Alex Smith nails Albert Wilson in the end zone. Wilson just didn't catch it. Field goals stink, but being up 19-0 didn't." What's crazy is the Chiefs were up 19-0 at halftime, and it wasn't even close to the best-case scenario for the team at that point. I mean, settling for all of those field goals could have come back to bite the Chiefs. It obviously never did, because the Broncos and Peyton Manning were completely incompetent in this game, offensively at least. But they were up 19-0, and that was not even close to as good as it could have been. I'm not complaining. I just think that's incredible. I'm not sitting here going, the Chiefs were up 19-0 and they could have thrown this game away. No. No, the Chiefs, every single step of this game, and don't talk to me about the last 13 points or whatever, they're in a pre-event defense against Brock Osweiler. Stop. I am absolutely not going, they were up 19-0, but it's not good enough. They missed opportunities. No, it was good enough. It was good enough because Peyton Manning was terrible and the Chiefs defense made him look extra terrible. My favorite stat is the other thing I'll bring up towards the end of this recap. In the first half, the Broncos did not run a play in the Chiefs territory. I think the farthest they got was exactly the 50-yard line. And Peyton Manning never got past the 50-yard line in this game. They opened the second half with an onside kick, a surprise onside kick they didn't get. It seemed like a desperation move. It was a desperation move because the offense couldn't do anything. It was unbelievable. So the Chiefs didn't then take that just far enough for a Cairo Santos 50-yard field goal. That was it for scoring for a while, but it was not the end of the fun for the Chiefs. Peyton Manning dropped back, tried to go deep to Cody Latimer, and Ron Parker got his pick. It was ruled incomplete on the field. The Chiefs challenged it, overturned. It was an interception. And that was it for Peyton Manning. His fourth interception of the day, Peter Smith, Mauga, and then Ron Parker. And then Peyton Manning got benched at home against the Chiefs on the day that he broke the all-time passing yardage record. It's probably the strangest thing I've ever seen in the NFL. Not like as a single play, but as over the course of a game, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time takes one of the most notable records of all time at home against a team that the Broncos and Manning, as a combined force, had never lost to. And in their eighth meeting, after being 7-0 against the Chiefs, Manning breaks the record and then throws four interceptions and then gets benched for Brock Osweiler. One of the strangest things I've ever seen in sports. Maybe it's because I'm tainted as a Chiefs fan, but he didn't score a point. Peyton Manning got shut out at home. Four interceptions. Broke the record in the first quarter. Just really bizarre. So Manning is taken out. Chiefs punt, Broncos punt, Chiefs punt. And then Brock Osweiler gets in on the action and throws the fifth pick of the game. And Osweiler had built, or in the Broncos, had built their best offensive drive of the game. In fact, the interception happened in the end zone to Eric Berry, who should not have tried to return the pass, but he saw the other end zone and wanted to give it a shot. And he ended up bringing it back to the 19-yard line, so it all ended up being the same, and it was a blast to watch. So Eric Berry gets a pick. If the Chiefs have gotten one more pick from one of those other players who hadn't had one already, over half of the defense would have had an interception on the day, which is just unbelievable. I mean, it's the most fun thing the Chiefs have done in a long time, and it was just simply beaten Peyton Manning to a pulp, which is something that took way too long to finally do. And then it took just two plays for the Chiefs to have the breakout play offensively of the day. Charkhandrick West got one run up the middle, didn't do anything with it, and then it was a, it's funny in the box score, I mean, it says Charkhandrick West, 80-yard pass from Alex Smith. Alex Smith did not throw the ball 80 yards. He threw it much, much shorter than that, and then Charkhandrick West took it about, I don't know, 75. But a big play from Charkhandrick West all the way out of the house. That was the Chiefs' last score of the game. The Broncos and Osweiler drove down one more time. Well, two more times, actually. But here they drove down for the second time. A Ronnie Hillman touchdown run was followed up by a failed two-point conversion. The Chiefs then drove a little bit back the other direction, and Cairo Santos missed a 48-yard field goal. And then the Broncos drove one final time and did it in an Andre Caldwell touchdown pass from Brock Osweiler. And then they took the extra point in this game. Then the Chiefs just took four plays, got one first down, and that was it. A 29-13 victory in Denver with five interceptions for the Chiefs defense, four of them from Peyton Manning's golden arm. And I think we might have actually seen a couple of historic things in this game. The passing record that Peyton broke on his second pass, and potentially the end of Peyton Manning as an NFL quarterback. I think we'll definitely see him again on the field. I don't think that was the last time we'll see him take the field. But this next week, Brock Osweiler is going to be playing when the Broncos go to Chicago. Now, let's look at a couple of the interesting stats from this game. A lot of them Peyton Manning-based, but also a really important stat about the Chiefs' defense and about the Chiefs' offense. First, after the game, Gary Kubiak said that he shouldn't have played Peyton Manning. And that's a nice thought, but it doesn't matter, and you don't get credit for saying it now. You probably shouldn't have played Peyton Manning because his foot was too banged up, but you did. And frankly, I think Kubiak had to. You can't just not play Peyton Manning in a divisional game at home unless you really believe in Brock Osweiler, which maybe they do, maybe they don't. It seems like they would have played Osweiler if they were confident in him at all. But to play Manning, I see the logic in letting Manning go out there. Maybe he should have had a quicker hook on him. But saying then after the game that he shouldn't have played him, it doesn't matter. And that's not like some big noble thing to say now. He's trying to protect Manning, trying to protect himself. He had to play Manning, otherwise it would have been a total, it would have looked like a total panic button moment. But maybe he should have taken him out sooner. I don't know, but I can't give Kubiak or the Broncos or Peyton Manning any sort of credit for now saying after the fact that Manning shouldn't have played. Therese Paylor said that Marcus Peters already has 13 passes defended this year, which is tied for second most by a rookie in Chiefs history. He ought to be able to keep climbing that ladder. Alex Smith has completed 228 passes without an interception, most in the NFL this year, and second all-time for the Chiefs behind Steve DeBerg, who went for 233. So just six more passes without an interception, and Alex Smith will own that record on his own. That's from Jeff Rosen. Now, here's my favorite defensive stat beyond the five interceptions, four off Manning, of course. But here's my most important defensive stat that I haven't heard talked about very much. I think it's very, very important, and I don't know why it took me 18 minutes to bring it up in this show, but I'm glad you're listening now. Pay attention. The Chiefs pressured Peyton Manning on 12 of his 22 dropbacks. That's over 54.5%. That's Manning's highest pressure percentage in the last six seasons. Now, you could blame some portion of that on Manning maybe not having a lot of confidence to step into his throws, and that then slowing down his release a little bit. But Peyton Manning's release has been his calling card his entire career. Obviously, he's incredibly smart and has been able to make every throw, but that quick release is something that makes a bad offensive line look fine because pressure doesn't get to him. And in this case, you've got to look at that stat. The highest pressure percentage in six seasons, that's not just Manning being bad. Manning throwing some ducks might just be Peyton Manning being bad, not being able to step into his throws. But that kind of pressure cannot be totally attributed to Manning being hurt or bad. That is an incredible showing for the Chiefs front seven, for the Chiefs whenever they would blitz guys from the secondary, for Bob Sutton. There have been so many times this season, early on in the year, Justin Houston disappeared for a couple of games. Tom Bahali looked old. D Ford wasn't doing anything ever. That's a big stat for this Chiefs defense. And that's pretty much, that should be repeatable against any team in the league. Against Phillip Rivers, they should be able to pressure him that consistently. Now, the Broncos' offensive line is not very good. And one thing I haven't talked about at all yet is the Chiefs' offensive line. I'll jump ahead a little to Ben Grubbs, who we're going to talk about later. His season could be in danger. A neck injury is so difficult to gauge. So, I mean, all we can do for Ben Grubbs is hope that he gets better quickly. But he hasn't been great whenever he was playing. So, just strictly on the football field, again, neck injuries are scary. But just on the football field, Grubbs hadn't been that great. Jeff Allen at left guard has been really good. And the Eric Fisher, I tried to warn you about Eric Fisher. You go back and listen to a preseason show, but don't listen to me talk about Zach Fulton, because I might have been wrong about Zach Fulton. But Eric Fisher is looking like an NFL left tackle. Jeff Allen is looking like a very good NFL left guard. Mitch Morse in the middle is playing very well. That right side is the problem. And Laurent Duvernay-Tardif and Ja Reed on the right side of the offensive line scare me to death. But against the Broncos, there always needs to be a tight end over there. Also, the Chiefs now, just to get all the injury stuff out of the way, I suppose, the Chiefs now down one tight end, rookie James O'Shaughnessy on injured reserve, fractured foot. We didn't know why he was inactive back in the Lions game, but now we know his foot's broken, which is disappointing because he showed some flashes, and I think the Chiefs want him to be a bigger part of this offense in the upcoming years. But Demetrius Harris and then Brian Parker will both continue to get more and more reps. Demetrius Harris especially, though, across from Travis Kelce. There's going to need to be a tight end helping Ja Reed, like, all the time against a good pass rusher. And Charkandrick West, his pass blocking has been very good. And also Anthony Sherman. Sherman was in, it seemed like, for more snaps of the Broncos game than most games so far this year. I don't have the stat for that. But he's also a very capable pass blocker out of the backfield. So to have someone in the backfield who can constantly be picking up the right side of the offensive line, whoever gets through there whenever LDT and Ja Reed can't hold up, the Chiefs are going to have to keep doing that. It's going to limit their offensive power a little bit. That just means there's more pressure on the guys who are actually out there running the routes. If Macklin and Conley and Kelce, or Macklin and Wilson and Kelce, whatever, are the only three guys that get to actually go run a real route because Demetrius Harris has to stay in and block, and so does Charkandrick West, those three guys have got to make it happen. And Alex Smith has to make it happen. That's where this offense will be challenged. But overall, this offense, to get to my other favorite stat from this day, or other most important stat from this day, it's not really a good stat, but it's something that we all need to know. Aaron Rodgers against this Broncos defense had 77 passing yards. Joe Flacco threw for 117 yards against this Broncos defense with two interceptions. People freaking out about Alex Smith and the Chiefs offense against the Broncos defense, just keep that in perspective. I'm not saying you're totally off base looking at, you see Alex Smith went 17 for 31 for 200 yards and one touchdown. Only two sacks, which I would take every time. Brock Osweiler was sacked three times. Peyton Manning was sacked twice. But you look at the stat line, it's not great. And it would be like 120 yards if Charkandrick West hadn't broken off that 80-yard touchdown late in the game. So I understand. Even if you take that off and Alex Smith throws for 120 yards, the Chiefs didn't have to drive very often. And West got 24 carries, 69 yards and a touchdown, and then that big receiving play for West. West was obviously the player of this game on the offensive side of the ball, and the entire defense carried the team. But the Chiefs never had to put together a drive under pressure, which is good, because I do doubt Alex Smith's ability to do that. But this being a poor-looking game for Alex Smith from an efficiency and yardage perspective, that's okay. That's fine. If there's a team he's allowed to do it against, it's this Broncos team. The Chiefs will never, for the rest of the year, face a defense this good. The Broncos' offense looked terrible, and the Chiefs ended up with 29 points. I understand that the Chiefs had 29 points, and I'm telling you this Broncos defense is the best in the league because they got put in a terrible position several times by Peyton Manning. That's not the defense's fault. The Denver Broncos defense is the best defense in the league. The Chiefs might not face a defense in the top half of the league the rest of the regular season unless the Bills have a nice game. The Bills have that potential. Nobody else on the schedule does. The Chiefs aren't going to face a defense half this good, again, except for maybe the Bills at home next week, which is going to be a bigger game than the Chargers game. I'll tell you that now. And Andy Benoit tweeted, by looking at film, the Chiefs have a chance to be a top three defense in the second half of this season. Poe and Barry are fully healthy. Derek Johnson in full swing. Cornerback position is solidified. Edge rushers plus speed throughout the entire defense. The Chiefs just face the best defense they'll face, and they will have a better defense than every other opponent the rest of the regular season. Their offense is not going to be the best offense in most of their games. But this defense is finally looking like the defense that we talked about in the preseason, and the offense will do enough if the defense makes these kind of plays. I hate watching teams settle for field goals. I hate watching the Chiefs settle for field goals. I loathe that, because it's leaving the points on the board usually whenever they had a good opportunity, especially if it's based off of a turnover. I hate that. But this Chiefs offense, we just saw them do plenty to put the Broncos away because the defense put the Broncos away. And this defense is going to have to keep doing that throughout the season from here on out if the Chiefs want to make the playoffs. But the Chiefs should make the playoffs. They have the path here. And if the team plays like they did against the Broncos, or like even close to it, they will make the playoffs. Now, can I see about 50 different ways that they can run themselves right out of it? Yeah, absolutely I do. I absolutely can see this team not only just missing the playoffs, but in a dozen different fashions. But this defense just showed how good it can be, and the offense just held its own against the best defense in football. So, pardon my optimism. Before I get on to the Chargers game, what the Chiefs need to do to win in San Diego, I want to talk about Patreon for Roughing the Kicker, patreon.com/RTK. It's a place where you can throw a little bit of money towards this show to help hopefully make it better, more consistent. Maybe next week I won't take until Friday to do an episode. I'm sorry, everybody. This week, a special first top-of-the-line thank you to Don Beal. He's the first $20 pledge on Patreon, and I appreciate that very, very much. Thank you, Don. Christine Roadlander at C. Roadlander on Twitter. Josh Beadle. Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44 on Twitter. Ben Rahman, all the Patreons for this week's show. Thank you very much for everyone who throws a little bit of money in my general direction. And if you have anything that you think I ought to be doing that I'm not currently doing, maybe it's having guests on the show, maybe it's something else that I've never even thought of, please let me know. Please contact me either on Twitter at JB Briscoe or on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show. You can send full messages there about just Chiefs questions, ideas for the show, things with Patreon, whatever it might be. I am always looking for your questions. And as always, thank you so much for listening to the show every week. It's so much more fun to do it whenever I know that there are people waiting to hear a new episode come out. So a special thank you again to Don Beal, new Patreon of the week, with the rolling with the fat stacks of dough. And again, thank you to all the Patreons and everybody who listens to the show, who shares the show with their friends. It's a blast to get to do this show for you. Kansas City Chiefs at San Diego Chargers. The Chiefs, as we know, are 4-5, and the Chargers are a measly 2-7. They won in Week 1 against the Lions at home, and their only other victory also came at home against the Cleveland Browns. They beat the Lions by 5 and the Browns by 3. In the AFC West, the Raiders and the Chargers both have a negative point differential. They've allowed more points than they've actually scored, which is the inverse for the Chiefs and the Broncos. But the Chargers certainly have it worse. Philip Rivers has played very well. There's a headline on ESPN.com right now that says, "Are the Chargers wasting Philip Rivers' best years?" And maybe they, I don't know if they are. I think they probably have already, but it's currently ongoing at this point. They've lost their last 5 games, lose at home to Steelers, road to Packers, home to Raiders, road to Ravens, home to Bears. Last 5 games, the Chargers have dropped all of them. Their season's done. Philip Rivers is playing very well. Their defense is bad. Their Melvin Gordon draft pick, the rookie running back, has not paid dividends at this point. He's had a little over 400 rushing yards this year on over 100 carries. Danny Woodhead might be the guy to keep an eye on from this offense, other than just who Philip Rivers goes to. It's become Stevie Johnson as the key of this offense as far as receivers go. Stevie Johnson had the nice run with the Bills a few years back. And now he's taking kind of the lead, I would say, because Keenan Allen is done for the year. They have Antonio Gates. I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to be scared of with the Chargers. Yes, this seems like a game where the Chiefs would be perfect to lose. You know, they get a big road win in Denver, then they have to go to San Diego, another division game, where this is just a game. It's not even, I'm not concerned about the division factor other than a tiebreaker for playoff space is your division, or I'm sorry, your conference record. So that in that case, it is important. But next week against the Bills is the more important game for the Chiefs because that's a head-to-head competition. The Chargers are toast. The Chargers are not coming back. But you look at the stats of the Chargers, and there's a bunch of bad stuff and then one really good one. Now, they're 30th in the league in rushing yards per game, averaging about 85 yards per game on the ground. That's nothing. Points against, 27.7, 29th in the league. Points for, 23.3, tied for 15th in the league. Passing yards, 382.6, that is best in the league. So Rivers is throwing the ball incredibly well. But again, it's Stevie Johnson on the outside. It's Antonio Gates. We just saw a very bad Peyton Manning. We saw a very bad Peyton Manning with very good receivers. Have those receivers shut down by Sean Smith and Marcus Peters. That just happened. We all just witnessed that. I think it's going to happen again here. I think it's going to be enough. I don't think it's going to be a 5-interception game by any means. I think Phillip Rivers will put up plenty of fantasy numbers, but I wouldn't start any of their running backs anywhere. I think Woodhead and Gordon will both have mediocre games if they're lucky. Rivers will throw the ball well. He'll do enough in the air to keep the Chiefs' defense not guessing, because they're not going to be able to run the ball against this team, but enough to keep them respectful of Malcolm Floyd, Gates, Ladarius Green. Those tight ends are always a little bit scary, but Vernon Davis and Owen Daniels did nothing against the Chiefs last week. Again, though, they're playing against the corpse of Peyton Manning. I understand. I remember. I watched the game. But beyond that, I mean, maybe Danny Woodhead out of the backfield scares you a little bit. I'm not afraid. The one matchup that does, I guess, scare me here a little bit is using Stevie Johnson out of the slot a lot, or whoever ends up in the slot, but it should be Johnson, in my opinion. If the Chargers run Johnson out of the slot pretty consistently, I think, yeah, they have a chance to be the Chiefs there if they get that matchup. But if I'm the Chiefs, I say, oh, Stevie Johnson, you're in the slot now. That's fine. Here's Marcus Peters or Sean Smith in the slot with you. The Chiefs don't need to lock Peters and Smith in to the outsides. They need to keep them with their best receivers. In fact, I'd like to be able to watch the Broncos game again and just look for this on defense. I bet Smith and Peters were following Thomas and Sanders for the most part during that game. Let Andre Caldwell beat you when you're playing the Broncos and see if he will. He didn't. I guess it's Peyton Manning who didn't, but Andre Caldwell did not beat the Chiefs last week. This week, let Malcolm Floyd do it. Figure out if he can. Dontrell Inman is listed as their number one right side receiver on rlads.com's depth chart. He's not going to beat you. If Tyvon Branch needs to cover someone man to man, I don't care who's in the slot or Jamel Fleming or Marcus Cooper or Steven Nelson, Hussein Abdullah, I don't care. If one of those guys has to cover someone, make it be Dontrell Inman. Let him cover Malcolm Floyd if you need to. But Malcolm Floyd can probably afford to put one of the two corners that we care about on him, as long as you keep Stevie Johnson in check, regardless of where he lines up. I think Bob Sutton knows that. And I think the pass rush will do what it needs to do to get to Phillip Rivers. This defense, I think we're going to see. I have a lot of doubts about the Chiefs offense. Everyone who's watched the Chiefs, this Chiefs team does. And you should. There are plenty of things to really question with how good this offense can be, where its ceiling is, whatever. Right now, the Chiefs are 10th in the league for points scored and 14th in the league for points against, the average score for the year being about 25 to 22 if you round up. The Chiefs will run the ball. Charkendrick West will have a nice game here if I could predict anything. The offensive line, I talked about the blocking a lot earlier. If the offensive line holds together with a similar scheme like that, how are the Chargers going to make this offense look bad? The last three games, the Chiefs have won. They've scored 23, 45, and 29. Against the Steelers, it's just 23 points. That's probably not going to be enough to beat the Phillip Rivers-led Chargers, because Rivers is playing so well, although it certainly could be because the rest of his offense isn't doing that much. 45 points against the Lions feels like an anomaly, and the 29 points against the Broncos was so defense-based. I see the doubt, and I think in a lot of cases it's really valid. But if you look at how many points the Chargers have scored the last several weeks, let's say the last five losses for the Chargers, going backwards, they scored 19, 26, 29, 20, and 20 again. But those teams where they scored 29 against the Raiders, 26 against the Ravens, Chiefs defense is a whole lot better than either of those two teams, and that Raiders game was at home. The Chiefs won't need to score the 37 points that the Raiders did to win this game, but they will need to have a nice offensive showing, and I think that they will. Not necessarily because I think the Chiefs do have a truly top 10 offense. They don't, even though the points total say they do. That's simply not the case, and we all get that. We've all seen that. This is an average offense on a good day, but this could be a great defense on an average day. And I will take that. I will take that, especially against a 2-7 Chargers team. Might be thinking about moving to Los Angeles. There's an interesting article that came out a few days ago about how that gets into players' heads sometimes. The Chargers aren't very good. They're not checking out. I don't think NFL teams, NFL players check out as often as we might suspect that they do, just with random speculation. It's an NFL team. It's a divisional game. It's on the road. I'm sure the Chargers would love to win this game. I don't think they're going to. I think the Chiefs go on the road and win their fourth straight game, their second straight game on the road, the game before that being in London. I think the offense does enough against a pretty poor defense. I think the defense does enough against a really good offense. I think Phillip Rivers will have a couple of big plays when we're all going to groan and go, "Ah, Marcus Peters, you look like a rookie for a second. I don't like that. Don't do that anymore." And then the offense will do just enough to win. I think it's a close game. The Chiefs opened as 3-point favorites on the road. I think they win by just about that. It'll be a stressful game, I'm assuming. It will not be a 5-interception blowout like we saw last week, as fun as that was. But ultimately, I think the Chiefs win this game something like 27-24. If the Chargers score 24 points, this team is in trouble. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, because I think the defense is the key here. So I think that's the closest to losing the Chiefs can get while still winning, is by scoring about 27 points. I don't see this team scoring 30, even though I don't believe in the Chargers defense. I do believe in the Chiefs defense. I think the game that the Chiefs would like to see would be more like 23-10, where the defense is just smothering all day. And I could see that game going basically either of those ways. But I do think the Chiefs win. I think they win their fourth straight game, and third straight kind of on the road. And the Chiefs' playoff picture looks really, really interesting. I'll wrap up the show with this. What do you want to look at? What do you want to root for in Week 11 here for the Chiefs to continue their march to the wild card? I'm taking some information here from an Arrowhead Pride article about it. Obviously, rooting for the Chiefs to beat the Chargers, 3-point road favorites. You want the Texans to beat the Jets. If the Texans beat the Jets, the Jets are one game ahead of the Chiefs, but one more loss in the AFC than the Chiefs do, which gives the Chiefs a tiebreaker advantage, because that's the second tiebreaker. Okay, Brian Hoyer may or may not be the quarterback here. TJ Yates and the Texans just beat the Bengals last week, which is really, really strange. But if the Texans defense shows up as it did last week against the Bengals, very plausible. Texans beating the Jets, that's important. Patriots versus the Bills, we want to see the Patriots not only beat the Bills, but break their psyche. Because the Chiefs play the Bills next week. Bills are playing Monday night. They'll have a short week, then coming to Kansas City. I don't like the Bills situation at all. They're sixth in the AFC playoff picture at this time, one game ahead of the Chiefs. But similar to the Jets, the Bills have one more AFC loss. So the Bills lose, Chiefs win next week. The Chiefs are right there. They're at the back end of the playoff schedule. And the most amazing thing to me is what would happen in round one of the playoffs. Don't get me started on if they have to play the Patriots or the Bengals. They lost to the Bengals already, and the Patriots are very, very good. I'm not concerned about that yet, because that would mean they have to win a playoff game. And at this point, if this team wins one playoff game, I think you have to call that an okay season. But right now, if the Chiefs were to ultimately get a wild card spot, they would either be going to Indianapolis with either broken and recovering Andrew Luck on a pretty average team, or they would be going to Denver, and that just worked out pretty well last week. Now, if Hasselbeck plays poorly and the Texans win a couple of games, maybe they're going to Houston. Or maybe the Broncos fall out of the chase and the Chiefs can push for the division. I don't see it. I think the Chiefs' best chance is a wild card spot. And as much as this terrifies me to say, I don't expect it, but I could actually see it feasibly happening, which is a really, really strange thing for me to say after how this team started the season. That's it for this really fun episode of Roughing the Kicker, the Roughing the Kicker podcast on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I am Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBriscoe, and I wish you would. I like having Twitter interactions with the listeners of this show. I love knowing that there are people not only listening and looking forward to the show, but that we can have a conversation about any topic we want to. And if you need a little more space, you can send a longer Facebook message to me at facebook.com/RTKshow. You can send a message to the Facebook page. That's something that Corey Teal did. Corey, thank you for not only for your message, but for listening and for all the nice things about the show. It makes me feel good. And I hope I covered all the bases that you wanted to talk about on this episode. The Chiefs' playoff hopes are alive. I'm a little hesitant to believe. I've had Lucy pull the football out from in front of me several times before. But right now, I have to be happy because the Chiefs just crushed Peyton Manning, and now they have a chance to do it to Philip Rivers. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, but I can't tell if it's sunlight or a train coming to hit us right in the face.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?
Bye, Mom! Okay.